I'm here speaking with Brian Concannon, a human rights lawyer and director of the Oregon-based Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Brian has contributed in the past to Radio Resistance, part of Off the Hour on CKUT. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Courtney.
So, have you heard from anyone, Brian? Have you been able to get through?
I've been able to get through some ways. I haven't been able to reach anybody by telephone, but I did have one former colleague call me by Skype, and I've gotten some emails from people in Haiti.
So what's the word?
Well, on the big picture, it's obviously catastrophic. The same images that everybody's been seeing on the Internet, I've been getting descriptions of that from people, and that's obviously horrifying. The good news is for most of the people, everybody in our office in Haiti and most of the colleagues that I've heard from are doing okay. But I'm sure that the bad news on friends and colleagues and clients is going to start coming in soon. I mean, the scale of the devastation is so bad that anybody who knows many people in Haiti is going to lose some people.
There's been a lot of attention from the Canadian government, particularly Lawrence Cannon, who's our foreign affairs minister, on the importance of Haiti to Canada. The decision has been made to deploy DART, the Disaster Assistance Response Team, which includes transport planes, helicopters, hundreds of medical personnel, and a warship. Likewise, there have been reports that more police will likely be sent. Haiti is one of Canada's largest recipients of aid money. Can you talk about a little bit about the role of Canada that they've played in Haiti, and also how that aid money has been spent?
I think that Canada and also my country, the United States, I think we're very good at responding, at providing short-term response to natural disasters. We've got great technological capabilities, a lot of muscle that we can deploy fairly quickly, and that is important now, and it's going to save lives, and I think that's great. But I think in the longer picture, both Canada and the United States do less good at creating the kind of sustainable economic development that Haiti needs to avoid these kinds of disasters. And certainly you're not going to avoid an earthquake, but it's pretty clear that the damage in Haiti is part done by the earthquake, part done by the extreme vulnerability of Haitians, which is a man-made condition. You've got a lot of people who are. I'm sure that when the details of the deaths come out, the people who died are the ones who are living in substandard housing, in places where those houses shouldn't be built, up on the mountainsides around Port-au-Prince. And the reason why people are there, and they know that it's precarious, and they know that the houses they're building are very strong, but they have no choice. And a lot of those people were intentionally forced out of the countryside by policies of Canada, of the U.S., and of the international financial institutions. They were forced out of the countryside in order to create a labor force in the cities that can be used for assembly manufacture. And I think there's debates as how good that is as an economic policy. I would say it hasn't worked out well, but it certainly is a direct cause of vulnerability to earthquakes, because from what I've heard from everybody who's living in the countryside's actually doing pretty well. That you have houses that are much simpler and farther apart and much more resistant to earthquakes.
So where has aid money gone in the past? What does it go into?
Well, there's been a lot of, especially lately, there's been a lot of critiques of aid that, in general, it's very poorly spent. That a lot of it goes to, and this is certainly true in the United States, and my understanding is it's true with Canada. A huge percentage of it goes to overhead, to salaries back in the wealthy country capitals, to nice buildings. If you go to Port-au-Prince, well, before yesterday, if you drove around Port-au-Prince, you'd see a large percentage of the cars are really nice cars driven by aid workers. And so a lot of the money gets spent in ways that don't directly help the Haitian people. But a lot of the money also gets spent in ways that directly hurt the Haitian people. I mean, one thing with food aid, for instance, it's often given in ways that undercut farmers, and that also sends people to live in the countryside, in the hills around Port-au-Prince, because they will dump food on the market right at the time where the farmers need to sell their crops. The farmers can't sell anything because people are getting food for free, and so they go out of business because they can't earn enough money to buy seed for next year's crops. Also, a lot of money that Canada has has spent was used to undermine the governments, especially between 2000 and 2004, where you had a government that was actually doing things like building housing for poor people that wasn't on a mountainside and was very much criticized for that. Canada undermined that government by supporting groups whose main purpose was to undermine or overthrow the government, and Canada played a very strong role in the once President Aristide was kidnapped, in securing the country and doing a transition to an undemocratic regime, which had absolutely no incentive to help the people and didn't do disaster planning or anything to reduce Haiti's vulnerability. And then again, I think I don't know the exact figures, but I think a lot of Canadian money is now going to MINUSTA, which has a very mixed record in terms of supporting democracy.
There's a national penitentiary in Port-au-Prince, I understand, which houses over 2,000 political prisoners. Do you have any information about the state of the prison?
I've heard that it collapsed, or at least one wall collapsed. There's 4,000 people there. My guess is that the estimate of 2,000 political prisoners is probably high, but there are political prisoners, and no one knows how many are there. But over 90% of the people there have not been convicted of a crime. So a very small percentage have actually been convicted. And if it's the population densities in there are so dense, they're 6 square feet per person or less, and so that a wall collapsing there is bound to almost anywhere in the prison is bound to kill a lot of people. So I'm very worried about the people in the prisons.
Montrealers, along with the rest of Canada and the U.S., will likely be sending cash to NGOs to help out with disaster relief. Can you provide information or advice about which NGOs might be good places for people to send their money and why?
Sure. One of the NGOs that I've been strongly recommending is Partners in Health. It's based in Boston, Massachusetts, and it's they do great work. I was actually at their facility in October, and I remember walking around with one of their doctors, and he was explaining their budget. I can't remember their exact budget, but it was a tiny amount for the amount of work they do. They're very fast in getting on the ground. When the hurricanes hit in 2008, they were one of the first organizations to get to Gonaive and to set up a hospital and start treating people. And one of the good things is their capacity is basically intact. I think there's a few of their staff are have not been accounted for yet, but most of them are safe, and the hurricane didn't hit the area where their hospitals are. So they're taking patients and responding to this emergency already, and any money that gets to them would be put to extremely good use. Another place I've been recommending people go is an organization called the Haiti Emergency Relief Fund, and that's based out of Berkeley, California, and they specifically target members of the grassroots political movement who need help. And often they've been giving it to people who are fleeing for political purposes, but now what this is going to do is get grassroots activists back in their homes and on their feet and whatever health care they need to get back into the battle to fight for a more fair Haiti.
Last off, do you know where people who are listening who have family members in Haiti would be able to get more information about the state of their family members?
That's a very good question. There's I know the U.S. Embassy has set up a line, but I think it's very hard to get people through that. I expect the Canadian Embassy will probably set up a line, but you know, in reality right now, I think that the U.S. Embassy doesn't know where all its people are, and I think it's going to take some time for everybody to get through. I've been calling Haiti. I haven't reached anybody, but I know that some people have managed to get through Haiti, so I would encourage people who have relatives to keep trying, and you might get lucky and go through. But right now, I haven't seen anything that's a really good way of getting in touch with people directly. What's happening, one of the good things about Haiti is you have incredibly strong social networks on the ground there, and that's where I'm getting news, is that one person will make a phone call, get a phone call out, and he'll be able to talk about many others and at least pass on news.
Brian, I want to thank you for talking with us today on Off the Hour.
Well, thanks, Courtney, for covering this.
Okay. I've just been speaking with Brian Concannon. He's a human rights lawyer and director of the Oregon-based Institute for Justice and Democracy in Haiti. Brian was speaking to us about the earthquake in Haiti.